welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Dyles McFlower. And tonight we have another show dealing with spirituality and metaphysics and science and all kinds of other kinds of issues and thoughts. I thought it would be interesting to talk about spiritual astral discipline. This is a subject I've done a few times, but tonight I'm going to do it in a little different way, because I'm going to talk about it in terms of how come we do certain things in relationship to the astral body. So you're going to kind of also get an anatomy lesson in metaphysics of the astral body. And so that's going to be a very different way of approaching the subject, but it may make more sense and get more people to consider this as a means of, we'll say, changing their lives. Now, to begin with, what do I mean by spiritual astral discipline? Well, spiritual discipline means that the only person doing the discipline is oneself, and that's it. Spiritual discipline isn't, you can't do it for or with or on somebody else. You only can have someone who chooses to spiritually discipline themselves do that. So it isn't that sometimes the more connotative way of thinking of discipline coming from some other source. That's not what we're talking about at all, as a matter of fact. It's the exact opposite. And the purpose of any kind of spiritual discipline is to get the body in focus and connected to the mind and functioning brain of that body. Those are two different things. And to allow the person to achieve an awareness of God through an awareness first of virtue and a sense of what virtue is around them and what's either lacking or needing this additional growth in. And then to realize that this growth is really the growth in God by helping life to become more virtuous as God is and is evolving. So that's what spiritual discipline is about, is this attempt to achieve this goal. Now, you might say, well, why would I want to do that? I mean, God's got everything going. I don't need to help God do his thing or its thing or her thing or whatever thing it's doing. Well, you see, the thing is that we are part of God. And this is how we become closer to God and become more as one together and with God, together with life, and especially human life. And so this is the basic formula for achieving it, because as we improve our senses, we then can move up to improve our knowledge and consciousness, senses bringing information. The information can be then converted, usually by our subconscious personality, into knowledge. And then the knowledge can be used as a matter of consciousness, so we become creative beings of virtue. You can't create with just knowledge alone. You could become a kind of robot and say a back. But the creative process requires consciousness, which is why you're not going to see too many computers, which have great knowledge, by the way. Sometimes they're very, very fast in maneuvering knowledge, but they don't have consciousness. So they aren't creators. They're kind of assistants to those who are creating. And so this is an interesting process. We want to get to higher consciousness, and higher consciousness spells a more meaningful, more definitely joyous and blissful life, if you can get there. But the motive has to be to become closer with and to help grow more of our Creator, God, through helping to grow more of virtue in the forms, which is life forms, around us. So we're trying to do this, and this is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. So In order to achieve all of these things, we have to, if we want to, spiritually discipline each of the bodies that we use on a regular basis. The lowest body is called the etheric physical body, which is the electromagnetic part of the physical body joined with the physical part that we're all so familiar with. That type of discipline, in a spiritual sense, is usually where people start. Tonight, though, we're talking about spiritual astral discipline, because so many people find that one particularly difficult, and also it's a more interesting metaphysical subject, because we're dealing with a body that is really very different from even the etheric body, which a lot of people find kind of unusual, because it's electromagnetic. But this is even far beyond, and we're going to get into that. So I thought it would be an interesting place to go to in our journey of finding out more about the, we'll say, hidden world, the occult aspects of existence. And occult just means hidden. And so maybe we can find out a bit more about that, while we're also making it unhidden and making it completely demystified and understandable, hopefully. So that's kind of my focus this evening. It's on spiritual astral discipline. Now, one of the things I wanted to note, and this is important because a lot of times when I've talked about this subject, I haven't gone very deeply into this part of understanding the astral body of human beings, but of all creatures, all things. The astral body actually doesn't exist in this dimension of time and space. It is part of us, but it exists in an added dimensional part of the universe. And I'll explain what that added dimensional part is in a minute, that is connected in some ways to the physical universe, but is not part of the physical universe. And this is the part of the universe that we actually go to live in after our physical body wears out or dies in whatever reason, and we then move on to live in the astral world. The astral world is an added dimensional piece to existence, meaning that life is actually more robust and has more opportunities for co-creating with its creator in a strictly, ability sense, not in an opportunity sense. The opportunities come from the ability that a person enjoys by going into this extra-dimensional world, but the real, in my opinion, difficulties along with rewards come from creating virtue right here in the physical world, in comparison to the astral world, because the physical world is so darn hard to do it in. So, in one way, you could say, well, it's so darn hard, and you can do so much more in the astral world, why wouldn't you consider that a better opportunity? Well, it is, in some respects, if you're looking at it from the standpoint of how much and how often are you going to be successful at it, but because more is needed in the physical world by far than would be in the astral world, and less is relatively done, then this becomes the hallmark in the physical world of creating virtue. However, tonight we're going to talk about the astral body, so we need to talk about how it functions within its own domain, which is the astral plane, or actually sub-worlds of combined together to equal one dimension of time and space. All right, what is this added dimension? Well, I think we're all familiar with height, width, and depth. Those are kind of like three dimensions, and we call those three dimensions part of our physical world. There is also a part of time that exists in the physical world as well. Only a part. And that part is mostly emphasized in the past. When we think of something, almost always our thought is actually capable of sensing time only after it has taken place. We can, as human beings, project time into the future, but that requires our mental body and the ability to the sense of time is based mostly on conjecture and probabilities, mathematically speaking, rather than direct experience. So it's not possible for us to live in the future part of time while we're physically alive and our consciousness is focused in our physical body. That's maybe a little difficult to understand, but as I explain this, it'll become a little more understandable. So, further explanation of this is, let's say you try to be in the present. Have you ever tried this? To be aware of something exactly as it is happening. And you may have noticed that if you try to do that, inevitably, you're always thinking about it, either seconds, minutes, or whatever it takes, after it has occurred. It's almost impossible for human beings, while they're physically alive, to actually think in a time sense directly in the present as things take place. And you might say, why is that the case? But it is true, but most people would agree with that because of their own experience, but they may not understand it. So that is the reason, those two types of time being mostly missing from our direct perception of time. I mean, we understand what the time is because we have astral and mental bodies to give us some clue about it, but we are so ignorant of those bodies that it is difficult for us to get a full picture of this. So I'm trying to fill in the dots. So we don't really have a good sense of the present and future while we physically live. And it's a relatively important aspect to the difference between the astral body and the physical body, because the astral body is much more capable of dealing with things as they immediately occur. Let me give you an example of this. Let's say you're watching a car accident from afar. You're not involved in it, but you're watching it take place, and you watch the two cars kind of crash together in this particular make-believe accident, and as you watch it, your mind goes to the details of what you're observing, but inevitably, you're dealing with past events. The details that you're absorbing take so much time. It's called wasting time. You're separating so much time from space in order to use your senses and then convert that sense into some knowledge, that by the time you've got the knowledge about what it was you sensed, much less the sense itself, literally seconds to minutes, and oftentimes longer, have gone past before you recognize that one car is bigger than the other one. There's two people in one car, three people in the other car. The drivers are very different. One was driving in an erratic way. The other seemed to be driving. You come to all these conclusions, but the examination and compounding of the information into a knowledge about what the accident was really about is laborious and very, very time-consuming. That's the limitations of the physical senses within the physical body and the etheric body. Now, I'm going to get to the etheric body in a second, but we're just talking about physical senses right now. So that's taken a lot of time, and it really doesn't come to you instantly, all the things that took place. As a matter of fact, a lot of people, as they witness it, don't have much knowledge about it at all because the shock of it is so extreme. And that's the key to getting to the astral body. Here's the interesting part. We actually have an almost immediate almost immediate astral response, even though our knowledge about what is occurring is going to take place minutes or who knows how long afterward. And so, in a physical sense, we're way behind the wall because everything's happening time-wise so much in the past that it just is like, it's like we're living history rather than living reality. But in the astral sense, most people would have an almost immediate, if not immediate, response. Like, oh, there's a terrible accident. Some people would immediately become threatened. Is it going to affect me in some terrible way? Or they might get very threatened for the people involved in it, or others that might be bystanders. There's this immediate response. And that means we're dealing more with the time in the present. Now, we also deal with the past there, because we like to bring in and understand the same things that the physical body is trying to relate to, like how did the accident happen, who might be involved, what is the outcome likely to turn out to be. And interestingly, that's still about the past, not about the future. And so all this is coming from information that we're garnering over time. So the astral body is quite capable of doing things in the past, just like the physical body, but it also has this other capability of having a more immediate response in time that the physical body is, for the most part, lacking, except in people who have what is known as fused senses. That comes from spiritual discipline. So as you discipline spiritually a body, you start joining together the senses, and this time thing is closer and closer to a more unified time than just splitting time into the past or present. And so the astral body really has, we'll say, an advantage in time. And that advantage in time is profound. But most people take it for granted because it's just, they don't do much disciplining themselves in an astral sense. And they don't read much of metaphysics or spiritual psychology. So to them, everything I just explained is not a knowledge, it's a direct experience. Yeah, I got that because that's how I experience things. Okay. Now, you can say, well, what is the interplay between the past part of time in the astral body? Like, similar to the way, but not exactly the same as it is in the physical body, and the present part of time. And the interesting thing is that when you compare the two, something develops different than it does in the physical body. You develop an astral feeling, whereas the physical body only has physical feelings, and physical feelings have to do with what we call physical sense. And it has almost a totally very different kind, because it's extremely tangible, but it has almost nothing to do with what we would consider to be emotion or love. It's just a means of recording a response from forces and pressure and heat and other things around us. But it doesn't give us this comparison that the astral body is able to do when you can compare in real time a past experience similar to the physical, but it doesn't have to be in physical form. You may be only living in your astral body when you have this, so that's a possibility. And that type of limited past response, although less limited than it would be in a purely physical body, and coming in at the same time, literally the same time, is this present awareness of the astral nature of the experience. The two are then compared, and a new knowledge base is formed, different than the knowledge you get from pushing on something or moving something, or touching something hot or cold, as you would in the physical world. Now you get this comparison, and the comparison gives you a new kind of feeling. A new kind of feeling is what we call astral feelings, or some people prefer emotional feelings, or other people prefer feelings of love. Actually, all those are part of it. Each one of those words has slightly different or somewhat different meanings. But the point is that that's the experience that the astral body is having, different from the physical body and added to the physical body. Now, how does that happen, and why does it happen, and where do these two parts of time exist in a kind of nexus state within the astral body, and they're really missing? We only got the one mostly past part of time in the physical body. And the big difference is the astral world has this added dimension to it. And let me explain it to you. The added dimension has to do with how energy is moving in the body, from the body to the body that the person is using. And it also has to do with how energy is moving around the body. And in the universe of the astral world, how everything is moving around the body. In other words, we have a sense of the direction or movement of energy itself. In the physical world, we can only sense energy as it puts forces against something. Well, forces are when things are slowing down or stopping. In the astral world, we don't have to slow down or stop in order to sense energy. We can sense it without impeding it at all, if we want. That's not possible in the physical world for the way the senses and the dimension of space functions around and in a person's body. Now, you could say, whoa, this is getting kind of deep. Yeah, it is, but like I said, I've never explained this over the radio before. So this is a good opportunity to get better acquainted, let's say, with this very esoteric but extremely important understanding about the differences between the astral body and certainly the physical body, and we'll also talk a bit about the mental too. But the astral body, it has a different quality to it. The quality is that it is directly sensing energy. And see, we only sense energy in our physical body indirectly. And that's a huge difference. The indirection has to do with this business about time, as I earlier explained, and the way the senses in the astral body themselves are made out of the same dimensional area that the astral world exists in. So the senses have gained an extra part or dimensionality to themselves, giving them the opportunity to directly sense energy without having to involve itself in forces. Now, sometimes it does, and I'll get into that, but nonetheless, it doesn't have to. So it's a really cool kind of thing. It's way different than the physical body. And so I think this is part of what tonight's show is so intriguing about. We're going to get into the astral discipline part. But the first part of the show is really going to be about the body. It's like an anatomy lesson in astral bodies. Okay. All right, so here is this amazing thing. If you're in your astral body and your consciousness is focused there, focused in your astral body, whether you're physically alive or astrally, you can directly sense the direction of energy. And you can focus your senses in ways to understand the energy if it's moving in one direction or a different direction or two or more directions at the same time. If you are seeking God, people learn, and this is part of the spiritual astral discipline part, that seeking God using the astral body means that you must be seeking an experience with the energy around yourself in ways in which the energy is always moving away from yourself and towards others so that it helps them to do the same with others themselves. Okay. Let me say that one more time because you may not have caught that. Okay, so if I'm, say, wanting to be closer to my Creator, wanting to be more like my Creator, and I have some understanding of what God is, I then recognize that one of the things many people use this term, God is love. No question about it, God is love. But there's different kinds of love and different levels of love, and I'm not going to get into all those tonight. But I'm just going to state that before anything else, I have to understand and examine what love is in general. And what love is in general is that the energy that I am using, I am giving, I am changing around me, must be moving away from me and towards others. But the most critical part about this is it has to be helping those others so they can achieve an easier time, a better time at doing the same thing for still other people around them and other things around them. So if they are becoming more loving in this kind of universal kind of soul kind of loving way, then I might achieve my goal of trying to give to them so that will happen. Okay? So this is the kind of astral love that we're hoping to move to if we're doing spiritual discipline. Most people don't achieve that level of love. They achieve what is oftentimes referred to as a personal kind of love, which means that the love helps the other person, but it stops there. You give something to someone, it makes them feel better, it makes them maybe like you more. But even if there's no ulterior motive, which lowers the kind of love you're doing, but even if there's none of that, it still doesn't help them to become better givers to others in the same or similar way. And that devalues the kind of love that you're creating. So it's very interesting. And when we examine this process, it's really possible to say that people who are very loving and who do so beyond just on a personal level are in a state of astral discipline. Whereas people who stick to the more personal levels are usually ignoring the concepts and the difficulties involved in astral discipline. We'll get more into why that's the case later, but for right now, I think it's generally okay to state that. So here's an interesting point. Since the energy can move away from us 100% if we choose to, and the energy just simply follows our creative imagination, which is the type of thought that we have when we're thinking through our astral body. So we imagine it doing that, and then it does. It follows what we imagine. But let's say that we're selfish. Let's say we're really concerned about ourselves and how these energies are in some way helping us, in some way that we believe helps us anyway. But it doesn't help us get closer to God. As a matter of fact, it does the opposite. However, regardless of that issue, we could still say that the astral body is still capable of sensing the energy. When it does, then the energy doesn't have a feeling of love to it, and it isn't the soul kind of love, especially, because we're not even close to that. We're thinking of ourselves. It becomes emotion. And the emotion has a number of different qualities to itself. So now the same energy that could be used as love is now becoming emotion in us. Now, the more emotional we become from this process, the less conscious we are growing, the more we are becoming, we'll say, undisciplined and lacking a sense of God in ourselves and in others. Also, another weird thing is happening. We may still experience the past and present parts of time, but they are not well integrated together. We experience them very separately. So the astral body still has the capability of sensing both senses of time, but usually not at the same time together. And so we don't enjoy the ability to control our emotions when we do that. We don't recognize that we are continually making astral mistakes, pushing our consciousness lower, reducing our love in and for others, and reducing our ability to help others to become more loving in the same way. And we ourselves are not practicing being our souls. We are personally, and usually quite selfishly, emotional. So emotions are the result of mistakes in our life choices and in not seeing and understanding and becoming more of God. We're doing the opposite. And it's a very negative thing. Okay. But so many people, so much of the time, are emotional. That's right. It's the rare person, the very rare person, that virtually ever chooses a significant amount of their life to join the past and present parts of time together, to focus their thought and their actions onto serving others so that they can be more loving and do the same to with others ad infinitum. So this is not common. If you were to live your life like this on a very consistent basis, in short order, miraculous things would start happening, which we'll talk about later in the show. These miraculous things have to do with the results of spiritual astral just discipline. And it's all related to this relatively obscure understanding that people usually don't have, about their astral nature and astral bodies. Because very few people even have a clue about what the astral body is like. So let me go into more detail about the astral body as a whole. We've got some of the fundamentals of the concepts, but now let's talk about more specifics. The astral body, because it senses energy besides just forms, and because it's dominated by the energy around it, because this added sense of direction of energy dominates its sensory perception, that doesn't mean it doesn't have some sense of astral forms, which are still astral energy. But the way and reasons for its ability to sense astral energy have to do with the fact that even the densest form of astral energy is hundreds of times less dense than the electromagnetic part of the physical body. So what we're really talking about, astral form, is kind of an illusion of sense. It is sense that has come to be able to make things formed through this use of mind, creative imagination, so that it has a reality that it can interact with outside of an amorphous energy field. The human beings and animals, or any creature that has imagination, can go to the astral world and take this amorphous kind of just energy there and make it into a whole bunch of things that have form to them. But the form is still not based upon gravity as it is in the physical world, but on thought of those creatures that go on in consciousness to live in the afterworld. And so the astral world would even exist, as we understand it anyway, with all the things that exist there, all the forms that exist there, if it wasn't for living creatures making those forms through their thoughts, the creative imagination. In some cases, the souls of some of the creatures are adding to this effect, but it's their thought that still is doing it. So fascinating this thought is that it isn't really a world as we recognize it. We make it into that. And there's a number of authors that have described it, but not very clearly, not as I am tonight. And so they'll just make a general case and say, well, the astral world is kind of like, just like I said, an amorphous amount of energy, and it's the illusion of people and animals, higher animals, who are just creating form there that wouldn't exist if those things, those people weren't there. But we are. So for whatever reason you want to believe, the astral world is composed of a huge number of forms, some of which don't yet even exist in the physical world. They will sometime in the future, maybe. But so it's an amazing place from that standpoint. And probably the most amazing thing about the place is that it's literally created by the life that lives there. Not so much so in the physical world. And it's a kind of unusual place from the standpoint that the feelings that people and animals have, and sometimes you can even say trees and other things have feelings there too, the feelings that people have, and others, are much more profound because there's no physical body to get in the way. And you're more directly experiencing the astral energies as either love or emotion than you ever could while you're focused in your physical body. Now, this is if you're astral traveling or if you're dead. It doesn't matter. And this has an effect that on the physical body, while we're physically alive, we all know that as we experience our emotions, or love, one of the two, or some combination of them, it has effects on our overall physical body, subtle effects that are hidden from us. But we actually control most of what's going on in us, ourselves physically, by the added dimension of emotion and love that's in our body. Well, could explain a lot of things for some people. And this has been known about for a long, long time. It's just not common that people in general know about it. Okay, so here we have an amazing array of issues, like psychosomatic issues can be created from how a person feels, and that could actually have a change, a real change in the physical body. Goes far beyond that, though, that while we're mostly physically sensing because of the density of energy while we're physically alive, in the background, we're continually having either emotional and or loving feelings, and those are going on just as often. And those feelings have tremendous effects on our existence. And if we change those feelings into mostly or only love, we then are starting our path of spiritual astral discipline. I hope this is making some sense. I realize that many people have not read or understood this sort of stuff in their readings in the past. And so for a lot of listeners tonight, it's going to be kind of like new stuff. Although this stuff is in Licensed Meaning, the textbook I wrote, the fact of the matter is most people just don't get it. They really don't. I mean, I talk about it in a conceptual way, but it's difficult for people to say, yeah, I think I understand what the astral body is. Now, this is, I think, a more direct approach by explaining it over the radio. Okay. So when we come back, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we'll continue on with this, and then after that, we'll go into the spiritual astral discipline part of this. But I think it's important to gain a really grounded understanding of what we're talking about when we're talking about astral discipline, and that means disciplining the astral body. Okay, we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. My engineer was just having a little bit of the effect of emotionality, because I wasn't there, but I was. He just didn't hear me for a second. He says, are you there? Yes, I'm here. I like to give him a scare once in a while. What the heck? You know, but here is the point. Emotionality is a debilitating condition. Now, why is that the case? It's the case because you feel emotionality is only a part of the real feeling of love. It's a diminishing and demeaning aspect to existence within the astral body. It separates past and present parts of time. It causes forces to be developed within the astral body, which we'll talk about again in a few minutes. And these forces cause a person to have confusion about what they're actually feeling. So they don't have clear feelings. Instead, they have, we'll say, partial feelings that are often exaggerated by their own desires. Clear feelings would give a person a sense of empathy, meaning they could sense what others are feeling accurately, and give them a super sense of what God is feeling and what others, if they were experiencing God, would be feeling. That's called super empathy, which is kind of a word where I just added the word super to the empathy, since they're in a super way feeling. So you're feeling a degraded, demeaning, lost part of love. And the lost part becomes this emotionality. And most people live their life by feeling less than love. They feel some emotion, rather using their astral body that way. Every time you do it, it separates the astral senses from each other, the seven major astral senses, and it separates them from each other. It leaves the body open to astral diseases, which we're going to talk about, and it gives us a sense of loss of meaning in life, a sense of loneliness with other people, and the most important thing, a sense of not being connected to our Creator and not co-creating with our Creator. These are very nasty results from emotionality. Now, does that mean I'm talking about not feeling? No. Remember, emotionality is partial feeling of love. It's a love that has been diminished tremendously. And so I want people to feel. I want them to feel the most they possibly could feel, which then would restore their full feeling of love, and they would stop being emotional. But that's a tall order, and it usually requires spiritual astral discipline to achieve it. So it's no small thing to do. It's a biggie. How then does someone really get to the point where they even understand what astral discipline is, much less get into doing? Well, people somewhat more likely are going to do it when they physically leave the physical world and die and leave the physical body alone, and they go on to live in their astral body, because their consciousness is then focused in their astral body and they have no physical sensation of physical energy. They could have their physical senses fused with their astral senses. They still could not experience physical energy, because they'll be alive in the astral world where there is no physical energy. But they can then still sense some feeling of what the astral energy, if it were connected to the physical world, would feel like with physical energy. They can recreate this sense in themselves, which is a good thing, by the way. That's an excellent thing to develop. It's another outgrowth that comes from developing spiritual astral discipline. Wow. So there's a lot of benefits. I hope I'm doing a good sales job on this, because this is really important. It's more difficult than physical discipline by far, but the results can be profound in terms of who you become. And you become much more your soul by astrally disciplining yourself than just by physically doing so. If you don't physically discipline yourself to at least the same level that you're trying to astrally discipline yourself, you will not succeed. Because while you're physically alive, if the physical body is not disciplined, the forces created in the physical system obscure astral sense, and you won't be able to astrally discipline yourself. So you can't kind of jump ahead. People try it with disastrous results. So it's not something recommended by anybody, but some people do it because they're overly zealous. Sometimes they're very spiritually ambitious, and a lot of times they're looking to impress others. Those kinds of motivations produce negative results. Okay. Now let's continue on, because this is kind of, to me, still very, very interesting about what this body is really like. Okay, so we've gotten down to some of the physics about it, metaphysics, and we now realize that there's another dimension to the body. Time is different. You're adding two-thirds of the dimension of time to some extent, depending upon where you live in the astral world or where you can get to in terms of your senses. And the astral body senses are about feelings, in an emotional or loving sense, whereas the physical body is about feelings in a physical and electromagnetic sense. Very different kind of feelings. When we feel through the astral body, which is a lot of the time we're alive, it has an almost immediate, in comparison to the physical body, change in us. Astral feelings tend to make very rapid changes in our overall astral body and our overall response to other astral events. Physical things can take years. Physical senses can take years to have the same kind of change on us in some people. So astral feelings, they have some amazing effects in a short order. Also, the astral energy is kind of fluid, like water. It flows almost in a similar way to what water is, and many people call the astral realm the realm of water or fluid movement. And this is because, if you can kind of understand this is because the energy is moving at a much, much, much higher frequency, a quite different phase. This is kind of something that's unusual, meaning that the overall astral world is at a different angle to the mind of God than is the astral, the physical one. And so when we sense from it, we sense at this different angle, and it produces all kinds of significantly different experience to us. And all of us know this because everybody I think that I've ever met, including myself, is aware that an astral or emotional feeling or a loving feeling is uniquely different than our physical feelings are. Uniquely different. In other words, if you touch another person physically, you have one feeling. But you may have a very different kind of feeling in your astral body. It could become sexual, it could become paternal, loving in a sense of wanting to give to them personally, or wanting to give to them as a soul, or maybe you want to take from them. But all these things are very different kinds of feelings than we have in a physical sense. Very different. And that together, the two bodies have a great effect on how we live while we're physically alive. A great effect. And most people do not truly consider, and they oftentimes take for granted, their astral feelings. A significant problem. Some people deny their feelings. Some people don't think they're important. And some people exaggerate them and become victim to them in various ways. Now, what happens if you are very emotional and you continue to repeat this? Then you become a victim of your own desires. Emotionality becomes a reason for people's existence in itself. The sense of and feeling of emotionality sometimes is the reason that people exist in their mind and in their feelings. So most of life becomes how someone feels, and whether it feels good to them, makes them feel happy, pleasurable, etc. These kinds of feelings lead to astral disease. Now, what kind of diseases can you get in an astral body? Well, one of them is a thing called glamorization. What the heck is that? Glamorization is where, in order to get an emotional feeling, rather than a loving feeling that's soul-like loving, a person needs to be very focused on themselves, and they need to imagine a desire that they have. So they misuse their creative imagination in their thoughts about themselves, revolving around them having ultimately some pleasurable, good, nice feeling from whatever motion the astral energy is doing from, to, and with their astral body. So that's the motive. A person does something so they can feel the motion of this energy giving them these good feelings. Problem with that is the feelings become, as energy does, part of the person itself. And you can't get rid of it. So you constantly do the feeling until it actually becomes attached to and part of the astral body, and then the feeling itself has its own reality. It's the energy wants to continue to be doing the same thing it was doing before at a higher and higher level, because that's called astral gravity. And you end up with this elemental energy that's inside of the body that's gravitating towards itself and towards the centers or centers that are involved in helping to create the information that's involved in the creative imagination. And there you go. Now you've got something called glamours. These are actually things in the body that are not real, that a person has created because they like the way it feels to them. Feels. Most people live a considerable amount of their life based upon this model of reality, that they want to feel a certain way. And so they use their creative imagination and their astral movement to achieve these feelings, which are selfish and self-centered. Wow. Kind of scary. And that's considered an astral disease. Now, as these glamours are the primary cause of most astral diseases, but there are many subsequent diseases that can develop. You can cause damage to the astral brain, which leads to a sort of, well, I guess you would call this, in an astral sense only, a sort of state of being overwhelmed with emotion, overwhelmed with astral feelings to the point where the astral body cannot stop moving. In physical terms, we call this autism, when a person is born with their astral body in that state. In the astral world, they don't use that word. They have other words for it there. Actually, the people who live there in the lower astral parts call it astral jitters, astral nervousness, or some other kinds of different kinds of words. But it really is astral autism that can be carried over into the, if it's not resolved in the astral life, can become part of the astral body of the next incarnation of that soul, creating a new person, but with some or all, or possibly none, but most cases some, of this astral problem incorporated in the astral gene of the person, and so that becomes part of their body. More and more we're seeing this today. A lot of children being born autistic because they have this astral problem going on. And there's ways to cure it, both in an astral sense and in a physical one, but they are spiritual ways that right now modern medicine does not look at spiritual treatment of anything. So it's not going to be for some time until people understand the real ways to deal with this. And, I mean, we have some things that work, but the best way to deal with it is to focus out. I saw a movie, I think it was about 8 months ago or so, about a woman who is learning about cattle and other forms of growing animals, somewhat, most of the time for food production. But she was doing so in ways in which she was focused out on trying to serve and help others. And then she became aware that she could serve and help others who, like herself, were autistic. And so the important thing here is that when someone is doing, when someone is actually accomplishing this amazing goal of having this serious disease, which she was pretty seriously affected by it, she was able to reverse most of the effects of the disease whose spiritual astral discipline, even though she didn't know necessarily, that's what she was doing. Someone has come in here and given me her name. It's been a while since I saw the movie. Temple Grandin. Temple Grandin. From the part of the country of the United States where I hang out. She's originally from Arizona. So, Temple Grandin. And she's still going, still alive. Is done a great deal of service to others. She's taught people how to be compassionate, even to animals we're going to eventually eat, regardless of whether they think that's good or bad. She's come up with these more humane ways of treating animals. And she's also come up with ways of being more efficient in food production, simultaneously while being concerned about emotionality in people and trying to help people who are autistic like herself. If you knew her, you might think she's odd, but I don't think you would find the normal kinds of behaviors that are autistic as being prevalent. She's overcome most of them. And she did so, based upon the movie, if it's assuming it's true, through spiritual astral discipline. But she didn't even know that that's what she did. Okay. I don't think so at the time she was doing it. Maybe she does now. I the movie is not necessarily current. So, even though it's a relatively new movie. So I would like you to think about this, that there's a lot of problems that people have that who are physically alive that stem from their astral nature, particularly failed or people who are failing as spiritual disciples in the second level of initiation, which deals with disciplining the astral body. If they've gone through one or more lifetimes where they failed at it, they often tend to have significant emotional problems in the present lifetime. Why? Well, because whatever their failures are, oftentimes the soul wants to get them over it, so they include some of the genes from the last lifetime or lifetimes that were failures to get the person to get over the karma and to grow. And we're going to talk about doing that in a few minutes. But so it's a really fascinating thing that this body that we barely understand, that most people wouldn't even say exists, has a profound effect on how we live. And even if you're not a spiritual disciple, people's emotions have much more to do with their overall life and existence than oftentimes does their physical behaviors. Interesting thought. Women are a bit better at using their astral bodies than men. They have a higher sense of awareness on an average than men do from their astral body. So they have a bit stronger feelings than men do. This happens because the astral body is actually moving in the opposite direction in spin than the physical or mental bodies, which are male or masculine bodies. And the astral body, therefore, is a feminine body. And so females kind of match better the movement of the body and the movement of energy through the body, and so their senses are a bit stronger by nature. And for most people, that probably is not a surprise. Some people might think otherwise, though. They believe there's no difference between the sexes. But there's considerable difference. It's just that either sex has equal opportunity to become spiritual or to go the other direction. And that is obscured oftentimes by some people's thoughts about it, and it's supported by others. But usually neither one is correct for the reasons that they believe it. So ultimately, it's a confusion. And I'm trying to clarify that now. Women are better at feeling, and men are better at certain types of physical, dense physical, and some types of mental sense. However, when I say better, I'm talking about it takes less effort. Not that one can't become exceptional, no matter what their sex is in anybody. So just be aware of that caveat when I'm saying these things. Okay, just for brief rest here, we'll sort of let everybody's minds cool off for a couple of minutes. Just to let you know, I've been experimenting with our Fai Chi Jizik pain remedy. Another thing that it does, very well, by the way, is it significantly can improve circulation in the body. And the reason it does this is that it blocks some of the, or it unblocks, excuse me, some of the energies that oftentimes result in pain. But it not only reduces the pain, but it allows the energies to move freely. And when the energy is moving freely in the nadus system, that's the nervous part, system part of the etheric or electromagnetic body, then in the physical body, the energies in the nervous system and the flow of blood through the system and the flow of lymph in the system, which is kind of like the garbage system of the body, gets rid of a lot of the negative stuff. And all that flows better. And by improving that, your circulation is obviously better. And I was having some circulation issues, not to go into any of the specifics. And so I've been trying to use the Jizik for that, and I found, sure enough, it does do that if you take it, not in the maximum level, but in a regular basis. It will, over time, improve circulation. It also decreases things like triglycerides and cholesterol and other things, because, strangely, those things are also related to both circulation and how the liver interacts with circulation in the body, especially blood circulation, and also how it changes lipids or fats from one state into another, either by eliminating some toxins or by building up free radicals in the blood. Neither one is good. If you look at it from the standpoint, it's not good to have the toxins, and it's certainly not good to have free radicals. So you want to get rid of those things, and Fai Chi Jizik has some beneficial aspects to it. Beyond just a question of pain. Now, again, I'm not saying that that's something we could put on the label, and I'm not even sure that we would want to. But I'm just saying that I find that it is helping me in that way. And that's kind of a neat thing because it also found if you take a little bit of Soul Balance with it, not much, two, three tablets two, three times a day, you enhance this effect of improving circulation. Just a little note for what I think about it, and if you haven't tried it, you should. It's really worthwhile to try. One of the things I recommend is that people use enough to know whether or not it's going to work for them. Taking one or two tablets, this is an herb, it's not like a drug. For most things, it's going to do anything for you. It's, oh, it doesn't work. I heard a guy on the radio, well, or on my phone, I listened to the radio, and it didn't do me any good. If you had any significant pain, you only took one or two tablets, it wasn't going to do anything. If you took five or six, and if it's a really bad pain, if you took eight or ten, man, pain's going to go away, and then you can take less the next time, and even less the next time after that, and it'll stay away, and you'll be fine. But you can't use it as you might use some kind of drug, where you only take one pill, because the pills aren't designed to be used that way. They're designed to open up the body, not shut down nerves and shut down energies in the nadus system. These energies are called devonic energies, and they're smart. They're actually got consciousness. And when you take a drug, a narcotic especially, to kill the pain, you're dumbing down, you're reducing the consciousness of these energies. Well, then they send more pain to let you know about it. That's a kind of system that isn't going to get you very far. So then you have to take more of the drug. And you build up what science calls, modern science, tolerance. And then a dependency. But those things are completely caused by the fact that you're hammering away at these demonic energies instead of doing what Fai Chi Jizik does, which is, hey, instead of trying to shut down the energies, let's get them to wake up and participate in getting the energies to move more correctly through the entire nervous system, through all several hundred of the minor centers connecting to the major centers, so that pain isn't experienced anymore, because pain is just a signal that the energy is either not enough in the minor center or too much and stuck, not moving. So that's the purpose of Fai Chi Jizik. Use it that way and you'll get great results. Use it like a narcotic or drug and you'll get no results. So hopefully you'll use it the right way. And if you need to know more about that, you can contact us and we'll talk to you about it. But you also can read the label. The label doesn't tell you how much you take, it just gives you a maximum amount. That has to do with the FDA. Because if you want to say exactly how much to use, then you're kind of prescribing. You can make a suggestion, try this or try that. But with the Jizik, it's so individual that we couldn't really get away with that. And we're getting problems with the government. So all we could do is put down the maximum amount you should likely take without having some kind of more negative reaction. And you could still take more than that, but then you should be some professional person, a healthcare provider should be helping you out with that, because then you're getting into questionable areas of use. But you can use more than what we put in. In the beginning, you're going to use a lot, and towards the middle and end, you'll be using much, much less. So it's economical, but only after you get past the first few days, usually, of use. Another thing to consider about 5G Jizik. Okay, let's get back to talking about astral discipline now. So we kind of have covered, and I hope you have stayed with me on this, we kind of have covered that basically people are kind of unaware of their feelings, men usually more so than women, and that feelings are a major part of existence in life, unless you're living in the mental world, which is a different issue. And so for us to not be paying attention to how to improve what our feelings are doing to and with and for us in life, it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to go willy-nilly through life. But a lot of people want to, because to be aware of these feelings and then to make conscious choices about how we're going to deal with them, hopefully to become much more loving on a universal soul-like level, is quite difficult, and a lot of people don't want to take that challenge because they just want immediate pleasure and a kind of good sense of feelings in their astral body. That's unfortunate, and those people usually don't consider disciplining in any spiritual sense themselves. But for the people listening tonight, I would think that there's some value to consider this. Because the meaning in life is directly calculable based upon how much each one of our bodies is becoming more like God and becoming more virtuous in its creations with and between ourselves and other life. It's extremely important to recognize this, because most people, when you get down to it with them, and I do sometimes, they finally admit that the meaning in life, the meaning in their life, is what is important. But oftentimes they hide from this because they're afraid of death and they're afraid of this spiritual disciplines, and they're afraid of not getting immediate gratification for most of the things that they desire, and they're controlled by the desires because they have many glamours, and you go on and on. But despite all that, the truth is, and subconsciously, if not consciously, they know this, how much is my life meaningful? And many people have a great gap between what they desire, which is a bunch of usually destructive elements to themselves and others, and what meaning they could be and are not pursuing in life. And the meaning in life provides them with the real from the unreal, ways of gaining a wonderful life. So, how are you going to prove this to yourself? Well, the first step in astral discipline is to recognize selfishness. Most people do not realize that they are very selfish. They think mostly of themselves, and for the purpose of pleasurable feelings and the same thing could be true about pleasurable physical sensations as well as mental tranquility and ease of thinking rather than creation in the mental sense. I'm not going to cover a lot of that tonight, but nonetheless, this is where most people are in it. And this is why they end up dying. This is in a physical sense and eventually in an astral sense. And it's also why, because the bodies wear out from the forces, and it's also why they are miserable, literally, in their existence. Now, their misery may not be definable by what I'm describing because they don't understand it well enough. But if you're one of those people who's feeling miserable, and you're listening now to what I'm saying, this is a way to get out of your misery. So you have to define and understand your own selfishness and recognize that you may be doing this 99% of the time. That's an awful lot. 99 out of 100 times you're thinking of yourself predominantly, and others either secondarily or not at all. Now, how come that's you? Why are we selfish? Well, we're given this thing called a personality. The personality's got a very limited role, but a very important one. It needs to keep us alive, and it needs to help us and guide us in certain ways when we're very young, because we feel out of control most of the time. The world is a scary place, and our parents can only do so much, so the personality is like a super parent, but it's subconscious to the self, so the self doesn't even know we have a personality. The personality is this subconscious element within us that is seeking to be in control but not be responsible for most things. So it doesn't want to take any responsibility, but it wants to be in control of most outcomes, including how we feel. Here's the problem. You can't feel good, really good, unless you're focused out and loving others. And the personality wants to be in control, and it believes the way it gets to be in control is by receiving rather than giving. And by getting more than others have and giving little to achieve that. The personality is vastly selfish, even in normal people. And people who are disordered in personality, they can be hundreds of times more selfish than a normal person is. And normal people are pretty selfish. Wow, that gets pretty serious now. And selfishness is the very basis, self-focus I call it, the very basis of lacking any really meaningful life and, we'll say, a feeling structure that is in a state of bliss, a feeling structure in which a person is so close to their creator that regardless of what occurs around them, they can take it in stride without becoming emotional because they are in this state of bliss. Now, it isn't easy to get to the state of bliss. And if you're a teacher, particularly a big teacher, meaning that you have students who have a direct effect on you, it's almost impossible to even experience it until you die from the physical world, and even sometimes from the astral. So people sacrifice it. But nonetheless, those that do gain it have a miraculous life. Now, if you're sacrificing and you're really advanced along in the spiritual disciple range, the spiritual discipline of the astral body, then most of what I've told you, you already know. And you also know that you're going to be in replacing your bliss with a state of effortless surface, which is just as valuable. Bliss comes from what is called a nirvanic state, and effortless surface comes from a state of buddhi. And you, and before anybody can reach the atmic or nirvanic state, you have to go through and become 100% successful in exercising complete controlled intuition or buddhi and become a teacher. So this is not an easy road. And you can't get on that road, even beginning in the road, until you're aware of your own selfishness and you're doing something about the various kinds. You don't have to become completely unselfish. You just have to be aware of it and be working on becoming self-focused out. So this is really a critical element if you're going to really develop an astral body with the kind of feelings that people really want, which is a feeling of enormous love for all others. And the love is wise, which means it helps others to become more loving themselves in the same ways, or civilized, and allows them to do so. And the love becomes the sense of great service and tremendous accomplishment. And so the state of bliss, although a great state to be in, is a state that is well beyond human. And for humans, humans must seek a state of consistent soul level of loving to get the real meaning out of their life. And that comes by first being aware of how selfish they are. If you don't think you're selfish, but you haven't spiritually disciplined yourself, especially astrally, then you're just an illusion. You're lying to yourself, and you're using your senses in ways to hide the truth from yourself. Because you are selfish. We all are. So by nature, humans are selfish because they're given a personality. And the personality is born selfish. It has to learn to relinquish its control to the first the lower self and eventually a part of our soul called the higher self in order to achieve liberation from pain and suffering and from a depreciated and destructive, self-destructive life. You may have heard some of these things before, but maybe you didn't truly understand them because you didn't realize they were connected to how we're dealing with our own astral bodies. Hopefully that's starting to make some sense now. Okay, what's the next step in astral discipline after you're able to see your own selfishness? Well, the next step is in focusing that selfishness in those areas that you're selfish in ways of being of service to others. And that breaks apart things called glamours. That's what it does. It breaks those glamours apart, and it turns your own desires into the desire to be of service to others. So the self-desires, which are really selfish desires, become desires to serve others, and that is the next step in the program of astral self-discipline. It requires giving in very wise ways and becoming detached between your astral nature and your mental nature. So you can use your mental mind to find truth and wisdom while you use your astral body to feel. And sometimes some of the feelings you're going to have are not going to be very good. You may feel some things because people you're helping might be in great trouble and great suffering and pain. You may feel terrible because of that. But that cannot affect your mental processing of helping yourself to find truth and helping yourself to help others to find wisdom in the way they love. And you have to break something called the kama monastic connection. Kama monastic connection is something that goes back really millions of years in human development. And it's where the astral feelings a person has directly affects and even controls what their mental thoughts are. So they lose or lack wisdom and can usually not find the truth. The light is the truth evades them because of their kama monastic thought. What they imagine in their astral body becomes truth to them rather than what they conceptually challenge in their mental body being truth. So it's a difficult process because the astral body is actually leading and controlling the other bodies, and especially the mental body, but sometimes also the physical as well. And it's critical that a person be in service, not just sitting around and meditating and or praying if they're going to get into astral discipline, because it's through this service that I'm talking about, astral service, that a person truly is able to get over the kama monastic connection and they at the same time become wise givers. Wise givers. Okay, now I hope I'm not going too fast. There's a lot of information there about astral discipline in a short time. But I'm going to keep going. Don't hang up and don't turn off the computer or move to another station or whatever. Because I'm going to go back over this and explain it in other ways so that it'll make more sense if you haven't got it yet. Okay, so what else? Where does that lead you? That leads you now into a place where you're starting to live more as a soul because you're in service to others. You're seeking opportunities to be in service for others all the time. You're looking around you and saying, how much am I giving to that person, this person, this person? And what are the highest and best ways I can do so? Not to make them dependent on me, not to make them just feel like they owe me something or be overly grateful, but to get them to experience the same kind of love that I'm experiencing. Remember, your feeling structure itself changes in this process. So as another example of what I mean, when a person is spiritually disciplining themselves by using love wisdom and by giving to people in ways to help them to do the same thing, they have this overwhelming sense of being loved and their overwhelming sense of loving themselves because, not because others are doing it, not because other people are doing it, but because God is. As they do this, they get closer and closer through this creation of virtue or light and form to their Creator. And as they get closer to their Creator, they feel the love of God for them. Say it again. As you're doing this love wisdom thing that I'm describing, you break the kama monastic connection, you get filled to the brim with love from God. So you don't need You don't need to feel love from other people or things. Your life becomes one of true self-creation because you are becoming a co-creator with your creator. And you feel that creator more and more as you develop this super sense called super empathy from the empathy that you're using in service to others. And then eventually you're using the super sense empathy also in service to others. And the more you do this, the more you feel the love of God, the more you become whole and fulfilled. And the less you seek or desire it from anyone or anything else. Hope you're with me on this. Okay. All right. So we're trying to get to this state of unification with God. Where is the procedure then? Procedure is in unification of the astral senses. And the first place to start usually is with the sense that you're most selfish in. Remember, you're trying to find where that is, the selfishness. The center with the greatest selfishness is the one that you have the least amount of sense in, the one that you usually have the most amount of illness in, both physical and astral illnesses, and it's the sense that gives you the most consternation about trying to even understand what that sense is feeling, because it doesn't work very well. That's the real reason. And we're talking about astral senses now. So this is how you start. The selfishness is not just generalized selfishness. You look for it in the seven ways it's represented in the seven different chakras, which have seven different senses that are in accord with the seven kinds of energies that God is in part made of. This is the fascinating thing about this, is it becomes a roadmap for your own selfishness. And when you raise the consciousness of yourself, and you improve the sense in a particular center or chakra, then another sense or center is going to become the more dominant selfishness over time. And then you switch to that center of selfishness and work on that one, because you always look for the most selfish place unless there's a very strong reason not to, due to various issues of your service. Then you can't do spiritual discipline just based upon what you want, but then since you're doing service for others, it has to be what they need. So then that comes into play. Usually that's later on, after a person first starts this procedure, in a more basic sense. So the object here is to always look for the failing, or more worst, area of selfishness, which is going to be defined by a center, which is going to give you a certain feeling. You can find these feelings. I'm not going to go through them tonight. It's too difficult to cover all that. But you can find that listed in Lights and Meaning in Chapter 7. And so it has a certain sense and feeling. And then you convert the selfishness into those centers to a selfless act of service. You get closer to God. You are refreshed with the love of God. You don't wait to get something back from the other person you're doing, or people you're doing it for, or anyone else. You do it for the love of God and not for the love of others. Be careful, because there's a lot of hypocrisy. People sometimes do this because they want other people to think well of them and to love them. That's a particularly problematic issue in some parts of the astral world. So it's something you don't want to get into, and you want to make sure you're not doing it by mistake. Okay? All right. So there's a dynamic process going on. The selfishness does not stay the same. Some days the selfishness may come from one center and feeling, and then other days it comes from another. And you've got to be adaptable. And you've got to change your focus based upon where your selfishness is. People who can't or won't feel their selfishness and sense it are not going to be able to spiritually, astrally discipline themselves. Not going to happen. So this is important to recognize. This selfishness is no small deal. Anyone who says, well, I'm not selfish at all, they're so far from being able to do this, it's probably a waste of time for them to even consider. You've got to be willing to accept that you are selfish, or you're not going to make it through this whole dynamic process, which is not so easy to deal with. Okay. All right. So what's the next step? We now are going through these different levels of selfishness, et cetera. Well, you have what is known as an intricate pattern between your levels of service and your priority of selfishness. This is what I talked about a couple minutes ago, but there's another stage to it, which I'm going to go to now. So sometimes your level of service that you're trying to serve others is in conflict with you getting over certain areas of selfishness, and you may have to put those aside and instead work on the areas of selfishness which is best for the good of all based upon how you prioritize what that means and who and what you are serving. Once you get to that prioritization issue, then you're working in a different way. You're starting to work with others not only to serve them as souls, but to participate with them in service as souls. This is a big change, because the love of God that they receive also becomes part of what you receive. Therefore, you start exponentially, as you work with others, growing from not only your service, which does grow that way, but you also grow in a sense of love from God. And your super empathy grows the same speed. So it's really helpful to do this, and that's called a spiritual group, within a spiritual group. Now, the spiritual group could just be a bunch of people you do this with. You may not call yourself a spiritual group. You may call them the friends down the street. You may call them the people at my church or synagogue. You may call them whatever. Your business associates. Maybe they're your fellow academicians or students or whatever they are. But it's a group of people who have this common thing that they're doing, which is spiritual discipline. And they're helping each other because they're serving together. And their service together changes the complexion of all the things that I talked about on an individual level. It actually compounds, like compounded interest, and you're getting a lot more for the same level of effort. So there's much to be gained. You still grow as an individual. This is where people get confused when I talk about group efforts. You're always growing as an individual, even though you may be participating in spiritual service groups, doing various things. The individual part of you is, just like God, choosing to continually make sacrifices for others. But nonetheless, each sacrifice leads to further self-growth, which means you're becoming a greater individual, even though you're doing it in mass and lots of times with others in a group service circumstance. This is amazing. It's like multitasking, multi-everything, all going on. And the benefits are tremendous, really tremendous. And there's no penalty because you're working with a group of people that you lose any individuality, just the opposite, you gain it, if it's done the way I'm suggesting. So this is an amazing thing, that these are all the opportunities that are available to us if we want to spiritually discipline our astral body. Now, how does the astral body usually respond in the beginning of the process when we're trying to find the selfishness and all that business? Well, if you are a normal person and you don't have a disordered personality, usually you have some resistance from the demonic energies. The personality is a kind of childish being. It may be like 10, 12, 14 years old in an emotional sense, which isn't really great, right? But it does go along with the program more easily than you might expect, because it soon realizes that you're not really losing anything, even with the spiritual sacrifices. You're inevitably gaining. It just needs experience with this to prove it to itself, because just hearing me on the radio isn't going to convince it. But if, as it experiences this, it says, wow, this is great. I'm starting to feel love from God and love from myself, which is one and the same, because I'm becoming God. And I have this tremendous sense of accomplishment, this tremendous sense of well-being, this tremendous sense of truly giving what others really, really need rather than what they want. And I no longer care about what I want. I only care about serving others. It's like a total transformation, you might say, for some people. And it's a wondrous event, both on an individual and on a group basis. Now you could say, well, okay, it all sounds great, but it sounds like it's something that's very hard to achieve. And how is that going to really matter to me? I'm just barely getting by here. And sometimes I do something virtuous, but a lot of times I do selfish things. Or I just worry about things in a selfish way. What can I do? Well, the first thing is to coolly and objectively determine in as many ways as possible all the ways which are selfish, and then divide them up by sense. That's the first thing, remember? And if you can do this with others, it's even more beneficial. Like you got some friends or whatever you can do this with, it's more beneficial to do it together. It's a little embarrassing, some people, to admit all their selfishness to others. But it also is humble. And the humility breeds wisdom and breaks the common, or helps to break the common monastic connection, where the way that you feel and desire is the way that you live, and then instead of the way that you reason and think and understand in that body is being equally matched by the amount of love that you're wisely giving to others. That's a truly great state to be in. And we all have the capability to get there if we understand the means and methods to employ. It also pays to talk to others about your selfishness and they with you, so that you can see that this is not that uncommon. And at the same time, that you can work together to solve these problems without being only and solely alone, as though you're the first person in the universe to actually face these things, which sometimes it feels like. Really interesting stuff. Okay, so where does spiritual discipline eventually end up? Ends up in a process called the initiation, we'll call it, method of moving more quickly than many people deserve based upon their spiritual service. If you go through all of the necessary spiritual service and all of the necessary unifying of the senses required to become one undivided sense in each body, and then the bodies themselves be unified, that can take huge amounts of lifetimes of time. And unfortunately, the planet is on this accelerated, like, oh, it's going to be done now real fast, kind of breakneck speed, because what's needed that we're trying to deal with in terms of evil and other problems needs to be done earlier than would normally happen. So sometimes, as is being used now, there is a method called initiation. Now, what the heck is that? Well, some of you know, but others may not. It's a method in which you do this spiritual discipline, but you do it in stages, usually with a group of other people, and you do it with projects and ways of service that keep pushing your abilities way beyond where they are. So you're going to make many more mistakes, which may be painful and difficult. You may waste some time. But what's the advantage? The advantage is this. Once you have completed a level of service that's predetermined, based upon beings way beyond human, who are much wiser than me, these beings will add in the difference. It's like when you go to listen to on television these marathons and they're doing these things and they're giving this and that and all this stuff for great amounts of charity, usually. And sometimes some people or companies or whatever will do matching funds. Spiritual initiation is kind of like that, except the matching funds aren't given. They aren't given consistently. They're given in like one big boom. So when you reach a certain level that is way beyond where you might have normally gotten to because you've really pushed yourself, even though you haven't really done all the unifying yourself, then some of these advanced beings help us to unify our senses and finish the process within seconds instead of lifetimes. It's much faster. The problem is that getting to that predetermined level, which changes over time and becomes more difficult. So the spiritual discipline has to get us to this specific level, and many people bomb out because they're not getting feedback, they're not getting benefits from the spiritual initiation until the end. And you might say, well, why don't they change that? So many people wouldn't drop out. So many people wouldn't fail if they, on a daily basis or a weekly basis, got some kind of little point system or kudu or something coming back to them, and then this whole thing would be solved. Why we wouldn't have so many failed people in the spiritual sense. But the problem is this. The challenge is to be self-motivated and not other-directed, including benefits coming from some super being. So it was decided that spiritual initiation was never going to, or most of the time, not on Earth anyway, going to be handed out to people in little bits and pieces to encourage them to keep moving ahead because it's counterproductive. It makes a person more selfish to do that, not less. And it doesn't achieve one of the goals of spiritual initiation, which is, to begin with, to become less selfish. So it is counterintuitive and counterproductive. That's the problem. But then you're left with this big bang in the end of the thing and no encouragement until then and a lot less strengthening of a person's faith in God and in this system. And some people lose it. Some people say, you know, I just can't believe it's really going to happen. And they may fall from the path. Or maybe they just subconsciously have that sense. Their personality gets in the way. And it is developing a personality disorder then. And then that becomes a major impediment, besides the selfishness itself. Once that occurs, then a person has to first get over the disorder before they can even get over most of their selfishness. It's just a nutty and difficult system to beat out. Okay, so if we're looking at how this system eventually leads into the unification of the senses and bodies, we have to realize that we're not going to, on Earth at least, we're not going to complete the initiation itself. You're going to say, well, how far do you have to go today to get there? No. Well, today, you got to get there a little over halfway. But in the past, I mean, like thousands of years ago, you had to get there considerably less than halfway. So things have gotten tougher because our abilities are stronger at being able to do this thing, spiritual discipline, and to unify our senses and then to unify our bodies and make ourselves to what is known as a superhuman or a beyond human being. Some people call them masters of the age of wisdom or whatever you want to call them. It doesn't matter. They're beings that are in the next kingdom. They're not us. And they exhibit all of the properties of a soul. Those soul properties make them and make the kingdom they belong to the kingdom of souls. That's the very next kingdom beyond human. Now, does that mean they act or look like some kind of amorphous soul being or something? No. They actually continue to look like a human being, but the qualities they have in that human being are the qualities of a soul. Actually, the amorphous being that we think of as a human soul found in the higher mental world is an immature soul. And it has an appearance, but that appearance is not the final. It's just it's the infancy. The final is the human appearance. I know that sounds weird. It sounds like, why would human beings be the final appearance? Because we are in the image of our Creator. Who said that? The Creator. How do we know it's true? Because as you move in this process, you eventually meet some of these super beings who are way beyond us and who have the qualities of a soul, but they look, at least in some ways, human. And sure enough, there's an example of someone being a superhuman and still looking like a human. Therefore, it's logical to assume that as you continue on that process, looking human has a lot to do with being a part of God. Being human isn't. Being superhuman and beyond is. Well, I hope this has made some sense. There's a lot more to talk about, but hopefully all these things that I've told you about spiritual discipline now have filled in the gaps for those of you who have tried it and not gotten very far, and maybe has made more sense for people who've never thought of it. Because all these things really come together to allow us to move in to and become our soul, and as a living soul, to enjoy life as a much greater being with much greater meaning beyond anything human beings experience. Okay, I hope this has made sense to you. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.